Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to a City Council meeting. It's a pleasure to be able to introduce to you Reverend Ella Mae McDonald with the Agape Temple AME Church. Reverend Ella Mae McDonald holds a Bachelor of Science degree from the University of North Texas and holds a Master's degree of Divinity from SMU Perkins School of Theology. Since 1988, Reverend McDonald has served the Agape Temple AME Church. On September 5, 2009, she was inducted into the Elite News National Religious Hall of Fame Museum. She is an active member of the community and currently serves on the Dallas MS Board as Community Spiritual Director. Thank you for joining us. Please rise for the invocation.
Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Gracious Lord, I come to you this morning, first of all, acknowledging that you are all-powerful and all-knowing and ever-present. As I lift up before you at this time, Mayor Tom Leverett and the members of this city council, I thank you for their willingness to serve. On behalf of the mayor, I ask God that you grant him wisdom and guidance as he serves as mayor of this city and chair this council meeting. I also ask on behalf of the members of this city council that you give them wisdom and guidance, and as they seek to represent their representative districts, I ask that you help them to know what is best for the district that they represent and to stand accordingly. I pray, Lord, that as they seek to do their duties and responsibilities to regulate, to approve, to carry out, introduce, and vote on legislation governing and affecting the city of Dallas, that they will hear from you and you will show them what steps need to be taken to keep this city operating in an orderly manner. And help them to make right decisions. Your word declares that where there is an abundance of counsel, there will be victory. Thus I pray that they will be diligent to do their jobs in such a manner that your will be done and that the standard of life in Dallas will be enhanced. Thank you, God. May your glory and grace endure now and forever. In the name of Jesus I pray. Amen.
Ms. Cook, would you lead the pledge?
Let's pray.
Let's
fly. The United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, our nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I just want to say that Vaughn Seals Jones Hill is not here. She's on her way to Washington, D.C. on city business. She wanted to make sure I tell you hello and thank you for the good job you're doing. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. Today we're joined by Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson and U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development Regional Administrator Don Babers for an exciting announcement about federal grant awards that the City of Dallas will soon be receiving. This grant will help the City of Dallas' ongoing efforts to provide more workforce housing in areas of our city where there are some really exciting things happening. Congresswoman Johnson will be giving you more specifics about the award, but before I turn it over to her, I want to make sure that we say thank you to her for efforts in this and, of course, her work on the Trinity River Corridor project, as well as her efforts on additional transportation projects such as DART. As you all know, the City of Dallas partners with HUD on a number of different initiatives related to housing and economic development, and this latest grant announcement will strengthen that partnership. And I want to publicly thank HUD for all their support in doing here in Dallas, and I'm pleased that Mr. Babers could be with us. So if I could ask the Congresswoman...
Thank you very much, Mayor. Let me say before I begin my remarks on this project I travel to Washington tomorrow to Walter Reed to graduate from this midgrace. Let me thank the mayor, but thank the regional administrator of HUD for being here, and I really want to acknowledge the Real Estate Council, the Dallas Area Rapid Transit, the Dallas Police Department, and the Urban League for this partnership. It is always very, very pleasant to support a project where you have so many important parts of it working together. For years, I've been talking about a livable community. And in this plan, it will create a livable community. It will give the young people a place to play without fear, a place that families can enjoy each other without feeling they're threatened, a decent place to live where you don't have to be considerate of what zip code it is. And so it is indeed a pleasure. I'm thankful to HUD for the innovativeness that they're willing to listen to. And of course, I'm always grateful to the city of Dallas for being able to partnership in a can-do manner with our police department, with the Urban League, with DART. And so we're very delighted to be here this morning to mention just one more big step in the lives of the people of the city of Dallas. And I thank you very much.
Congresswoman, Ms. Johnson.
Ms. Congresswoman, if I could, Mr. Babers. As I mentioned, Mr. Babers is representing HUD. It's good to see you again. Would you like to add some comments?
Yes, thank you. I'm proud to join Mayor Lepper and Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson as well as the council this morning. This is an exciting time, and I just certainly want to thank Congresswoman Johnson for her hard work on the Hill for making sure that this money was shaken loose. This was a very competitive and unprecedented application where the federal agencies have come together, U.S. Department of Transportation, EPA, and HUD. And this is about sustainability, of sustaining our communities. And certainly the work that has gone into this effort has not been unnoticed. Out of a $40 million national funding, Dallas was able to receive $2.2 million. So you should give yourself a hand for that effort. This actual application of this money will go toward land acquisition and planning for four sites in the city that are part of Dallas's transit-oriented development that will include workforce housing, 193 units. Let me just say that I have gone around the region, and certainly Dallas is on the cutting edge in terms of what we are doing in terms of actually working as a close unit, all of the right partners at the table. It was not a coincidence that this city received these funds because, again, Mayor, the staff has done a great job of bringing the right partners to the table. And certainly when this application was reviewed, it was rated very high. And again, I can't thank the Congresswoman enough for the work that she did on the Hill with Secretary Donovan and making sure that things were taken care of in her backyard. So again, this is a great day for Dallas. It is the beginning of, I think, again, a new era in where the federal agencies are working together, literally working together, transportation, EPA. Where we have housing, we've got transportation. We also are looking at the green in terms of from an environmental standpoint. So this is a novelty. It is a new day, and we're excited to be a part, and certainly we couldn't have better partners than our Congresswoman as well as the city of Dallas. So thank you so much.
Mr. Atkins, and then Ms. Davis. Thank you, Mayor. Again, Congresswoman Johnson, it's a great pleasure to be here with you. for you to be a visionary of what you're doing for the city of Dallas. And colleagues, yesterday we were talking about UNT, Blue Line, and we were talking about sustainable living. And this is a good example of what it could be. But we also need to work together with the help of the congresswoman to make sure that things go forward. Again, thank you.
I want to thank you, Congresswoman. Can I have Linda McMahon? Linda, can you come forward, please? I used to work with Linda back in the 80s, and Linda is now the executive director, the president and CEO of the Real Estate Council. So come on up, Linda. Come on. I've been working with Linda for a number of years. Everything that I know, I learned it from Linda. Go to the front. I've learned it from Linda. She is a good sister, and I am so glad that she is partnering with Congresswoman Johnson. A portion of the planning grant dollars will be a part of the Green Line. And Congresswoman Johnson, I want to thank you so much, and Linda and Ms. Bezos, I want to thank you for all that you guys have done to make that happen. And some of it, and Ms. Carroway will speak for himself, but I am just excited about this planning grant that is so needed in part of District 7. So thank you so much. Thank you, Linda. And I am so excited that you are now the president and the CEO of the Real Estate Council. You will do a good job, I know, because you've done a wonderful job over the years with all the projects that you worked on with ICDC and other chuttos here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Mr. Salazar. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Congressman, let me just thank you for all the work that you've done. I've been here on council for quite a number of years, and I know that many projects would not have been done without your help. I want to thank your effort and work with HUD, and want to thank HUD especially for the many things that you've done as an agency to help not only the city in its residential development, but also in its downtown development. So I want to thank you, and obviously Real Estate Council, you always appreciate it, and I just want to take this opportunity to formally, publicly say thank you to all of you.
Thank you, Ms. Salazar. Ms. Hospital.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, Congresswoman Johnson, thank you so much for all of your efforts and support of this city. We couldn't do it without you. You helped us with the Tiger One grant. You know, you brought this wonderful planning grant to us here today that we heard so much about earlier in the year, that the silos were going to be broken down. So thank you for working for us and for being here with us today. Ms. McMahon, I look forward to working with you as PREC, and thank you for coming to see us today. Thanks again very much. You're very much appreciated.
Thank you, and let me add that my thanks, of course, and my deep appreciation for all the work, Congresswoman, that you have done and all that you will continue to do. And Ms. McMahon, the real estate folks, you guys are on the one, the saddles. When you look at what HUD has done, and you look at my district at Turner Courts, I'm just excited and just turning over, ready to get Turner Courts up, Mayor, thanks to your leadership as well and your support of those things happening in the southern sector. So to all of you, Mayor, Congresswoman, Ms. Bevers, and Ms. McMahon, to HUD and everyone connected and affiliated with it, I personally say thank you and appreciate all of your support.
Thank you.
In addition to that presentation, we have several different special recognitions that we'd like to give. And the first one is a very special one. I've had a chance to get to know the men and women of our Dallas Fire and Rescue very well by being out with them a number of different times. And I can tell you, until you are out with them, you don't appreciate the challenges that they face on a day-to-day basis. I think a number of my colleagues, I think Mr. Cadane was one of them, and several others, have been out on the training, the simulated training. And when you go into some of those buildings, understanding even that we've got people around us who are well-trained and it is a very controlled instance, you understand when you get into a situation like that, when it is uncontrolled, when it is the real thing, how difficult and challenging that is. Chief Burns, if I can have you come up here and join me. Every 5 years, the members of the Dallas Fire Rescue Department pause to commemorate those individuals who have dedicated their lives to the fire service and its long and noble tradition of service that reflects the highest degree of honor, professionalism, respect, and, of course, courage. The Dallas Fire and Rescue, I can tell you, is a very valuable asset to our city. Today, we are privileged to render homage to the 64 firefighters who have lost their lives over the years to serve the citizens of Dallas. The City of Dallas joins and supports the effort today to recognize the dedication and also the selfless sacrifices of men and women in the fire service, remembering and paying respect to those who made the ultimate sacrifice in the line of duty. Chief, to you, but through you, to all the men and women who are serving us today and who have served us over the years, it's a pleasure on behalf of this City Council to present to you this proclamation. I won't read all of it, but it identifies the importance that the Fire and Rescue Service plays today, historically, and as we look to the future here in the City of Dallas. It talks about the selfless commitment of the men and women who serve the citizens of Dallas on a day-to-day basis. It talks about the distinguished ranks of firefighters that are willing to risk their lives for the benefit and the betterment of our community. It also talks about the efforts today of this City Council, entire city, to commemorate, to join with you, to support the men and women. And then the final paragraph says, whereas, in commemoration of this day of memorial, we too honor and pay homage to those firefighters who have heroically laid down their lives in service to others, and with heavy hearts, express our deepest condolences to their families for the loss of a precious loved one and for the pain that they continue to endure. Chief, now therefore, myself as Mayor of the City of Dallas, but also on behalf of not only the City Council, but 1.3 million people who call Dallas their home, we'd like to present this special recognition to you as Firefighter Memorial Day. Please convey to all of your troops how much we appreciate everything they do every single moment of the day.
Thank you, Mayor and Council and Manager. Just want to say that on Saturday, October the 23rd, we'll hold our memorial service at Dolphin Road, our Fire and Police Fire Training Center. And I want to acknowledge some of the family members of some of our deceased firefighters. And if you'll please stand if you're here. As a matter of fact, the mayor asked you to come up. The Moore family, G.C. Moore's family, if you're here, would you please come up? Adrian Cal, the family member of Adrian Cal is here, would you please come up? Gerald Field. As these family members are coming up, the mayor already alluded to the ultimate sacrifice. And every day in the City of Dallas, firefighters put it on the line. They go into burning buildings. They save people's lives. And sometimes they have to give up their own lives to save other lives. And so we want to honor and pay tribute to all these members that have died in the line of duty in the City of Dallas. So on Saturday at 10 o'clock, please come and share in this memorial service to honor those members that paid the ultimate sacrifice. Thank you. of other firefighters are coming. I also want to acknowledge the people that worked on this committee. They worked tirelessly trying to make sure that we honored these members that died in the line of duty.
And Cynthia, to please come up. George is the executive director of the Martin Luther King Jr. Family Clinic, and I would like to give a special recognition to Cynthia Fitzgerald. And this is what the recognition says. Whereas Miss Cynthia Fitzgerald is a woman who believed in the dream of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And whereas Ms. Fitzgerald has proven herself over the year to help with community schools, church organizations, civic volunteer, and personal donations. And whereas she is a woman of generous giving of her time, talent, service for the betterment of Dallas, business community, and to all mankind. And whereas Ms. Fitzgerald has an opportunity to provide health care service to those workers who are less likely to have employment-based health insurance coverage. And whereas Ms. Fitzgerald selected Martin Luther King Jr. Family Clinic, a private, nonprofit community health care service, as the recipient of a personal donation of $50,000. So let's give that up. $50,000 to the Martin Luther King Jr. Clinic. It subsidizes the cost of Medicare and dental service for underinsured and underserved local residents. Whereas there's no doubt that Ms. Fitzgerald will leave a long-lasting impression and put her mark on what she has done in the South Dallas Central Park area. Now, therefore, I, Carolyn R. Davis, council member of the Dallas City Council for District 7, and on behalf of the mayor and the Dallas City Council, do hereby extend a special recognition to Cynthia Fitzgerald. Come on up, sister. Come on up. She is my hero for her giving of the Martin Luther King Family Clinic. And Ms. Fitzgerald, I really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for what you've done to help that community. Thank you.
I want to say that I appreciate the opportunity and thank you so much for the honor that you have given me. I'd like to just say that I was inspired by Ms. Kathy. I had an opportunity to go down to the Martin Luther King Health Clinic and meet with her and tour the facility. And I was so impressed by the work that they were doing and the population that they were serving. And so really the gift was to me to be able to make the donation to the Martin Luther King Health Clinic. And I'm so grateful for the work that she does and how she serves the community, and it's my honor to be able to serve you, and I thank you for allowing me that opportunity.
I think it's, first of all, it is an honor to work at Martin Luther King Jr. Family Clinic. I've been there 12 and a half years, and I believe in doing whatever we can to help those in need. We see people... We see children ages 14 and 15 years old who have babies, and they aren't married and they have no place to live. We see elderly people who come in who don't know where to go until they're very, very sick and end up in the hospital. We try to do whatever we can to promote health and wellness, but it's difficult to do that in an environment where people don't have a lot of support. So what our job and role is to do is to try to encourage each and every person, not only our family members, but those that we don't know, so that they can understand that it is important that we take care of ourselves and our family members and others. So the Martin Luther King Jr. Family Clinic for the last 24 years has tried to do whatever we can to help anybody, whether you have insurance or don't have insurance. We just want people to have access to health care, to have access to good quality and affordable health care. But to have an opportunity to be blessed with an individual who is not even from the state of Texas to donate $50,000 to our health center is not only a blessing, but it's just an example of what we should do as individuals. When we're in the position to be able to help others, we should do that. And so I just want to say thank you to Councilwoman Davis for giving us this opportunity, for supporting what we're doing, and that whenever we have an opportunity to expand into other communities, we'd like to be able to do that, and we need your support in doing it. And the support that we receive from Ms. Fitzgerald is one that we hope that others will follow. Thank you so much for this opportunity, and thank you, Ms. Fitzgerald. We love you. Thank you.
If any of you watch NFL football games lately, you know that October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Breast cancer is the second leading cause of cancer's death among women in the United States. This year, an estimated 207,000 new cases of invasive breast cancer are expected to develop. Now, although breast cancer is more common among women, research also shows that this year alone, nearly 2,000 men will be diagnosed with breast cancer, and 390 of those will die from this illness. Many of us may know someone who has suffered or have lost their life to breast cancer. Early detections and screenings are vital to ensuring that we prevail in this fight against breast cancer. Even though researchers still do not know all the causes of breast cancer, they do know that certain risk factors, and they also know that it's crucial that we continue to support those research programs. This month, we're recognizing those who are fighting against breast cancer and encourage them to continue to fight and know that, indeed, there is hope. Now I would like to invite up, if I could, Dr. Gorita Frierson. Doctor, please join me. Now, I had a chance on Saturday to be out for the Race for the Cure, and the number was listed at 26,000. I think it was a lot more than that in the end. And what was so special was not just seeing the numbers and the races and those sorts of things, but it was visiting with the women and the family. In some case, it was the women survivors, and dealing with the success and hope that they have today, but also the challenges and the difficulties they had battling the disease, in some cases for years and years of their life. And then the second part of it was visiting with the families. The families of those women who had been diagnosed with breast cancer and unfortunately lost that battle. And talking about the loss that they still endure to this day, and talking about the bravery of their loved ones. And those were indeed the touching ones. And, Doctor, I just want to, on behalf of all of us, present this proclamation to you. It is a small piece, small recognition of all the efforts of so many different organizations that are out there working on this, trying to deal with not only the treatment issues and the awareness, but also the research to hopefully bring a cure at some point down the line. And again, I won't read all of it, but it talks about breast cancer, and it talks about the prevalence of it being such, unfortunately, a disease that afflicts so many different women. It talks about all the numbers that I went through, the over 200,000 new cases, and it talks about the nearly 13,000 female Texans that will be diagnosed with this disease this year, and unfortunately the nearly 2,800 that will lose their life to it. It also talks about the National Breast Cancer Awareness Month for the last 20 years of trying to get that message out of how important that early detection is. Then it talks about all the different sponsors and identifies a number of those sponsors that are stepping up, great partners in our community to try to make a difference on this disease. And then probably most importantly, it says, whereas early detection and prompt treatment can significantly reduce the suffering and deaths caused by the disease, mammography, a low-dose x-ray of the breast, is the single most effective method of detecting breast changes that may be cancerous long before any of the physical symptoms can be detected. So then it says, on behalf of myself as mayor and the entire city council, we designate October of 2010, and especially Friday, October 15, 2010, as Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and a special recognition on that date of October 15th. We just want to present this to you, and also, on a personal note, thank you for everything that you're doing in the fight. Doctor, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Leppard, council members, and I was going to say in a special appreciation to Mayor Pro Tem Carraway for all your continual support of my research and work in the communities in Dallas, and we also do work in other communities as well. As you heard today, this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I am a clinical psychologist, not an oncologist, but I do work with many of the providers in the community. One may be our National Cancer Institute Designated Cancer Center at UT Southwestern. I hope people are aware that we have an NCI Designated Cancer Center now in North Texas. That is a huge accomplishment for our medical school. Also, with some of my colleagues at the Cooper Institute at Brown Medical School in Rhode Island. And I also want to thank all the cancer survivors who are in the room today, maybe breast, colorectal, prostate. We thank you for all your support of our research. I also want to thank all my participants, too, that have been involved with my research. There's some, and there's some of my collaborators behind me at UT Southwestern. There's various great things that we do at SMU. Yes, we're a liberal arts college, but we are committed to the health of our community in Dallas and Dallas-Fort Worth. And some of the projects that we're doing are working with the Latinos and African Americans in the community to make sure we are all educated about mammograms and educated about the recent changes in the guidelines. And also, we're trying to build more pilot funding so we can have education and healthy living interventions for our women in the community. And also, there's a new type of breast cancer that many people may have not heard of called triple negative. It's a very aggressive form of non-hormonal breast cancer. So we have some funding right now from the Discovery Foundation, which is located in Dallas. They've given us $25,000 to look at the new phases of breast cancer we have behind us. It's not just a disease of elderly, it's a disease of all women and also men, Mayor Leppard, as you mentioned, too. So we just want to thank you all for your support. If you have any questions for me, please feel free to find me. And my website is called Arch One Lab, A-R-C-H, One Lab. If you want to know anything about the work that we do, but we just want to thank everybody in Dallas for supporting breast cancer research, supporting healthy living. It's great to hear all the different initiatives that are going on today as a health psychologist in Dallas. So thank you all. And again, thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Carraway, as well.
Thank you, Doc. And let me just say that, one, personally, and Mayor, she has been a true trooper when it comes to volunteering and staying on the cutting edge of making sure that the education of not just this, but educating our community has been to the forefront. She has dedicated her time voluntarily to the teen summits that we've had and talking and dealing with the kids psychologically. She was visiting with a family in my office just a couple of weeks ago, making sure that they had the proper counseling and guidance. And I just wanted to appreciate you publicly and make sure that folks know that your tireless effort, I mean, you are just a true trooper, and I just highly appreciate it. So thank you for all that you do.
Just a brief recognition. Jen Patrick Schmidt, if you would come up here for just a moment. We did a special recognition a little bit offline, but I wanted to say a special thank you and do it publicly. Jan Patrick is the Chief Executive Officer of Montblanc, and he's in town opening a large new store at North Park, so we enjoy having that commerce, both for the value that it gives from a tax base, but also the international posture it gives to. We appreciate the investment that you're making in our community. I just wanted to recognize that and say a big thank you to it. So,
thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor Lefferts. We've been in Dallas for many, many years, and in the midst of last year, I think, which was the biggest economic crisis in recent history, we actually made the concerted decision of investing into the city of Dallas, of creating jobs, of tripling, actually, the space of our store. We've been a brand for over 104 years supporting culture and the arts, and I'm looking forward for the many decades to go that we're not only good corporate citizens, but we also support the culture and arts program of the city of Dallas. Thank you very much.
And thank you. Let me. I'm going to get you back.
Great opportunity to support culture and the arts here in Dallas.
Mayor, we visited in my office prior to coming here, and I was trying to make sure that, and I know that we can't just really get rid of these things that we're currently using, but then I was going to make a suggestion that since they are here in our city, that we begin to sign all contracts, Mary, we'll fix it up. But with the Mont Blanc pen, so that's one thing I thought that we would be able to do. Mr. Atkins?
Thank you, Dwayne. You know, Mayor, you know, international travel, but he did say he might be looking for a home in Dallas, so you're welcome to District 8, so I'll put my hand out. We got a place in District 8, so you can be the citizen of District 8.
All right. Mr. Salazar.
And certainly, we're going to be expanding the Latino Culture Center, and we are looking at creating an Asian culture center as well, so we wouldn't be opposed to the Mont Blanc Theater as a possibility for a future. But welcome back to Dallas. Thank you for expanding. We appreciate it, and we'll do business later.
Mr. Cadane.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mr. Smith, for being with us and being in Dallas and making Dallas one of your premier locations to be. And we appreciate that so much. And I like to know, I want you down here too.
And thank you
very much.
And I'll close with this one. Mayor, this may be the perfect opportunity for us to make sure that since we're moving into the winter season and all the water has been drained out of all of our pools, it sure would look good to have Mont Blanc painted on every swimming pool at the bottom throughout the city of Dallas. That just may be a great idea for you. All right.
We appreciate you being with us. Thank you for the investment. And the opening is tonight? Tonight. Terrific. So it's a great opportunity. Dallas Symphony, Mont Blanc, North Park this evening. Thank you very much. Mr. Atkins?
Here we go again. Dish Ray, National Night Out. You know, for the second year in a row, yeah, here's some pieces about this race, National Night Out. So we're going to look at these fine pieces. Run, we got a little music this time. We got over 400 neighborhoods there. Great pumps.
again, you know, just imagine, you know, I know Mayor Lepra and the chief of police and Mayor Rassoum, everyone cannot get to all National Night Out. It's completely impossible. So what we did this year for the second time, we have 25 homeless associations come together as one. And now we have opportunities for the mayor, the chief of police, the constable, everybody to come to see everyone at one time, which was a great, great thrill. We had a great weather. Like I said, 450 people attended there. We had the chief of police, the fire department, the SWAT, and that was me riding a horse run. So we kind of pushing the horse part, you know. So, but we could not do it without great sponsors. And some of the sponsors we have, I'm going to call out. We have Fred Burkhammer from Subway, when you come up, and he provided a sandwich. Also, we have Luke Charlton from Lowe's, who gave away a grill, and was a lucky person who won his grill. And Jerry, you would get a kick out there. They said if you said it belonged to you and you pray over it, you win it. So all the men were praying over his grill, but his woman came up and won the grill. She prayed harder. Irvin Asper for Comerica Bank. Gilbert Ramsey for Star Concession. Did I miss out anyone else? We did have Chick-fil-A was there. We did have Chubby's was there. They provide all of the pastries and dessert. You know, everybody knows Chubby's got a great pastry and dessert. It was a great time, but also it was a time of getting together and educating the people about National Night Out. And that's what it's all about. And again, you know, thank the colleagues. I know Dwayne Carraway, you know, he gave him a shout out. He called. I'm not, what's going on with our Dwayne? But Dwayne, we did have more people than you. So no offense, Dwayne, but you told me talk about you. But okay, thank you, Dwayne, very much. Carolyn, you know, Angela, you know, Bella Hossoff, Steve Salazar, Ron DeTense, Kid Limit School, Shepard Dane, and my daughter, Jerry Allen, in the mayor. We all had a great time at National Night to give back to the community, and it's all about safety and education. Again, I have a small recognition, and I'm going to read all of this. It's that whereas this year added a taste of District 8 Dallas, brought donation for National Night Out sponsors that add to the celebration through Starbucks coffee, Star Concession, Hot Dog, Subway, Chick-fil-A, Chubby's, Star Concession again, Target giveaway card. We also have Walmart giveaway cards also. Whereas National Night Out have proven to be an effective and enjoyable program to promote neighborhood spirit and police community partnership in the fight for safety in the neighborhood and district. Whereas the benefit the community will deserving from National Night Out will most certainly extend welcome beyond one night. Therefore, I tonight like on behalf of Dallas City Council and Marathon Leopard in the city of Dallas, hereby extend a special recognition to these people of the restaurant. Again, thank you very much.
Thank you. Madam Secretary, if we could go to our morning speakers, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. We begin your morning speakers this morning with Michael L. White, followed by Michael Piazza. I'll first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll note the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. You should address your statements to Mayor Leppert. Again, your first speaker is Michael L. White. Not present, Michael Piazza. Please state your name and address for the record, sir.
Thank you. I'm Michael Piazza, and my address is 2711 Welborn in Dallas, Texas. Mr. Mayor and honorable council members, I'm here today to present a petition signed by 1,000 people requesting that the Dallas City Council pass a resolution encouraging the Dallas Independent School District to do everything in its power to prevent bullying, the bullying that has led to so many suicides of late. Just down I-45, a 13-year-old named Asher Brown took his life last month because he was bullied in school for being gay. Earlier this month, just north on I-35 in Norman, Oklahoma, 19-year-old Zach Harrington took his life following a toxic debate at the Norman City Council meeting, I might note. Our lesbian, gay, transgender, bisexual children need protection. 9 out of 10 of them report being bullied, and they are 2 to 4 times more likely to commit suicide as a result of it. Today I could speak to you as someone who was for 22 years the pastor of one of the largest churches in this city, a church known as the largest predominantly LGBT church in the world. Or I could speak to you as the president of Hope for Peace and Justice, which circulated this petition and presents it to you today, a peace and justice activist group. But I'd like to use my 2 minutes that I have left to appeal to you as a parent. I have 2 teenage girls, a junior at Townview Talented and Gifted High School, and a senior at Booker T. Washington School for the Performing Arts. My partner and I, frankly, could have afforded to have sent our children to private schools. We did not, because we believe in the public schools and because we believe in the public schools of Dallas. It hasn't always been easy, though. My oldest daughter, when she was a middle schooler at Harry Stone, which is one of our premier schools, when the state of Texas proposed a constitutional amendment which denied marriage equality to her parents. Next month, my partner and I will celebrate our 30th anniversary, so you can imagine my daughter's surprise when her language arts teacher told her students to encourage their parents to vote in favor of this constitutional amendment because, I quote, God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. My daughter had the presence of mind to raise her hand and say, excuse me, Ms. Smith, then who did create Adam and Steve? Now, Jerrica was secure enough to be able to defend herself, to assert her own beliefs in her family. Her teacher responded, I guess you know some of those people. And Jerrica said, only just about everyone in my life who loves me. Now, imagine if you had been a young, frail, preteen boy in that class and heard that teacher say that as you're struggling with your sexuality. Or imagine if you had been a bully, abused at home, looking for somebody to take your anger out on. That teacher just gave you permission to single out a particular group. As a father, I beg you, make a statement that this is not the kind of city we live in, that we know that all children are all God's children. Thank you.
Again, thank you for coming forward to talk about this delicate situation. And when I left home this morning and I was driving down the freeway and I was going down 35, and there was so much traffic, so I had to get off the side street. And Duane knows when I get off the side street, I go and cut down Keys and go down to Rent. And while I was going down to Rent, and for some reason, I said, let me call this particular person this morning, see how she's doing. And she said that my son just got sent home. I said, what happened? Well, he had a fight. I said, I mean, what type of fight? He said that someone was picking on him, kept picking on him, and he hit the person back. And he got expelled from school. But I said, why did he get expelled? He said, because he hit the person back. But to me, he had a right to defend himself. And I told her that you need to go back to the school and make sure they put in his file what happened. So I agree with you. You know, sometimes you sit there and get bullets so much, you got to protect yourself. And I think we do have a problem with DRC, because this morning I had this phone call, and I'm going to follow up on this particular issue. We did talk yesterday about, do we should be engaged with DRC? I think we do, because I think we're part of the city of Dallas, and I think the children will be citizens of the city of Dallas. At some point, we're going to have to bring DRC board here and have a discussion and have an open dialogue, because they are citizens of the city of Dallas. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Humphrey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Michael, thank you so much for being here today and so eloquently explaining such a challenging issue that our schools are facing and our children are facing. I hope everyone had the opportunity to see the video of Councilman Joel Burns from Fort Worth, who explained his experience with bullying and how it affected him and how he handled it, and encouraging children to hang on. It was just a beautiful video and a beautiful statement, and so I hope folks have the opportunity to see that if they haven't. I would be happy to support this, and thank you for taking this on, and again for highlighting such a critical issue for our kids. So
thank you.
I'll grab that from you and we'll
thank you.
Make it happen.
Ms. Hossel, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Piazza, again, I want to thank you for also thank you for coming down and taking the time to get all of these signatures. I fully support what you're doing. I was at the rally last Friday night at Lake Cliff, where we did recognize there were seven, I think, or eight young people who have committed suicide because of bullying. And I do think that we need to take a stand on this as a city council. I'm almost certain that our DISD board of trustees have also begun to see the light. At least the three that I have spoken to fully support the bullying ordinance that they did try to, policy that they did try to pass last week. They are going back to tweak it to add CLBT. So I know that they are looking at it, and certainly our support would help.
Thank
so
you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you, Chairman, please.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you for coming and stepping up to the plate as related to bullying. And as Mr. Atkins mentioned, just this past 2 months, I've had two incidents. One was a teen summit where a 15-year-old kid that's now under my watch stood up here at City Hall, and because of this very thing, bullying, his choice was suicide. Now, thank goodness we had the summit. Thank goodness he had the nerve to stand up, and that was during the gang summit that we had the last 1 year, because he had nowhere to turn. Last month, another single mom and her 15-year-old kid, who attends Roosevelt High School, was on the football team, and all of a sudden, he was no longer on the football team because he was being bullied, not by football players, but by some bully that was beating him up as he was trying to walk home on a daily basis. Thus, his mom transferred him from Roosevelt because of a bully into a private school. No one should have to be bullied in this city. And as Mr. Atkins and my other two colleagues have said, I join them in supporting you with that effort. I would ask us to make sure that we engage, and I'll ask the mayor as well, as he has been very engaged with the ISD, that we facilitate, Mayor, some type of conversation with DISD and engage them as to what it is that we can actually do to stop it. Now, as Chair of Public Safety, of course, bullying is against the law as far as I'm concerned. But I don't know if it rises to that point at this particular moment. However, it is something that we need to, as the City of Dallas, make sure that our citizens are safe. But through education and through our contacts with an association with DISD, we have that responsibility to make sure that bullies must stay home, okay, and let the free kids roam.
Ms. Bargon, please.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you for coming and raising this issue in front of us. I have actually received calls in the past 6 weeks twice about bullying based on religion. And so it takes many forms. And whatever form it takes, it's extremely pernicious. And we need to be aware of it because kids will either have the tendency to strike out and then get in trouble or go inside and then suicide is a possibility. And so it's something that we all need to take seriously. So thank you.
I just would like to note that there are lots of forms of bullying. It is the fact that gay and lesbian teenagers are 4 to 6 times more likely to commit suicide as a result of it. And that's the issue I'm trying to raise, that in the city, our school system, school teachers, regardless of their religion, should not be allowed to impose their views on kids sitting there who might have parents or who themselves might be struggling with this issue. We just need more sensitivity, I think, and throughout the school system. So
and we appreciate you being with us. And as Ms. Bargo pointed out, a lot of different angles on this.
Thank you very much.
All need to be helpful. Thank you very much.
Your next speaker, Shams Cohen.
Good morning. My name is Shams Cohen, and I live at 4246 West Lovers Lane in Dallas. It's an honor to be speaking here with you today, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I'm intern minister for social justice at First Unitarian Church of Dallas. Our church has some 1,200 adult members and another 400 or so children and youth. Our church is over by Mockingbird and Preston across from the YMCA, but we have congregants in Dallas, Park Cities, Richardson, Plano, and as far away as Waxahachie. I'm here today in part to advocate for our youth, and I'm happy to hear what everyone has shared already about the bullying issue. We've been alarmed by what the media has recently unearthed, the large number of teen suicides resulting from bullying. I personally don't believe that this is an increase in the phenomena, but rather a long-standing social disease that the media has finally brought to national attention. And today, nationally, there's a drive to wear purple in mourning for the youth who killed themselves and in support of anti-bullying legislation, so that's why. I mean, you know disrespect by wearing a t-shirt to your meeting today. These are the t-shirts that our congregation wore in the Pride Parade this year, and we had the largest religious contingent represented with over 200 people. For as long as statistics have been kept, LGBT youth have had a disproportionately high suicide rate. Unitarian Universalism affirms the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and we have been one of the most progressive mainline denominations on LGBT issues. But I also want to say that this is not only an LGBT issue, as some of you raised. Bullying affects all children. All children can be targeted. Often non-gay children who are different in any way, including issues of race or religion, are targeted, as well as the heterosexual children of gay parents. Children need to be safe from bullying in school, and they need to be taught how to diplomatically resolve conflict without resorting to violence. Nonviolent cooperation is the key to global human survival in the 21st century. If we hope to make it to the end of the millennium, we're going to have to need to learn more about nonviolence. I came here today because last Sunday, our church first circulated an anti-bullying petition inspired by the one from Cathedral of Hope, Hope for Peace and Justice, In just one Sunday, we got 267 signatures already, and we're planning to get more signatures this Sunday. Dave Plunkett told me that Reverend Piazza was on the speaking docket today and turning in their petition, wearing purple, like some of the others in the audience, in solidarity with the youth who were bullied, wounded, and despairing of fair treatment so much so that they took their own lives. We at First Unitarian, our congregant staff, and all three of our ministers are devoted to work on and show solidarity around this issue. We know that good ideas are abundant, but dollars for implementation can be tight. We want to offer our services and experiences around youth sexuality education and conflict resolution as a resource, should you wish to collaborate with us in any kind of partnership. Finally, we want to affirm the statewide poll reported by the Texas Freedom Network, which reports that 88% of Texans, quote, support requiring public schools to protect all children from bullying, harassment, and discrimination in school, including the children of gay and lesbian parents or teenagers who are gay. I have that report with me should you want to view it. Maybe you've already seen it. Thank you for your time.
Appreciate
and
it.
I also have copies of my statement if anybody
Thank
would
you.
Like to see that.
Ms. Davis, please.
I just want to make sure that being a PTA, a life PTA member over at Pearl C. Anderson and a PTA president myself, that you also call DISD and make sure you get on their calendar to speak.
Okay.
Make sure that the school board of trustees hear you. What you're saying to us is real important that you say it to them. And that your congregation get involved in going to those DISD meetings and setting up some type of, and asking them to set up some type of committee that deals with this issue around the schools. And also, you have your State Board of Education. Please get with your State Board of Education and get with the National PTA, Parents Teacher Association, and ask them what they're doing around this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
Thank you. That's really helpful, and I know we're going to talk to the entire city
ISD
also.
Madam Secretary.
Yes, sir. The next speaker is Ermitra Jane Henderson, and she will be followed by Jonathan Pike.
Hello, Mayor Leppard, and I don't want to waste my time. My name is Ermitra Henderson, and I'm from the South Dallas sector, born and raised in Arbonton, Turner Court. I've been a victim of a crime here in this city where the police never showed up. I called the police 10 minutes before the crime happened. There were 45 911 calls at the time of the incident in that area. There were another 50 911 calls from the police for the place I was dropped off to after I was brutally beating my head with 14 staples to the top of my head, one staple in my wrist, and multiple contusions all over my body being beat by my fiancé. No one ever came to my rescue. By the time I got to the hospital at 12 o'clock, I was asked if I felt safe. I said no. I was locked up, put in the psychiatric ward, and still I don't feel safe. My offender was allowed to escape. He was called and asked if he wanted to come down and talk to the police department about this incident. Of course, he accepted and never came. The police department knew he was fleeing from two other states on felony aggravated charges. He was allowed bond of $15,000. I sold crack in 1991 and got a $50,000 bond. The judge made that decision. The judge also made the decision to give him a $15,000 bond after fleeing, knowing his past record was for two aggravated assaults, fleeing from two other states, which he had never been prosecuted on, still wanted from those states. He got a $15,000 bond. I'm asking for somebody's help. I don't care who. I don't care if it's the Dallas City Council, the Dallas Police, the mayor. I don't care who it is. I'm asking for somebody's help in my safety. This guy did not show up for court yesterday. There's another barn company who is being held liable for his capture. There's another blue warrant out. Of course, that's going to help when he's already fleed two different states with those same blue warrants. I'm asking for somebody's help. And it don't take 3 minutes for me to plead for somebody to help me get this guy off the street and help me feel safe. The Dallas Police Department wants to do nothing
but tell me that they did their job. Of course they did. When they called him, asked him, could you come and talk to me about an incident that you may be involved in? I was involved in selling crack. Did anybody call me and tell me, hey, can you come talk to us about selling crack? Because I could have told you I was hungry. My kids were hungry. I didn't have a place to stay. Could you tell me why this guy attempted to kill me and attempted to kill everybody else? Was it because he was hungry? Was it because somebody in his family needed help? Was it because he needed to stay out to be with his son? I needed to see my two grandchildren being born. On July 1st, 2008, this happened to me. On April 6th, 2009, my grandson was born. I may not have been there. On 9/9/2009, my other grandson was born. I may not have been there. Who's going to help me? Who's going to help me now that he's gone again? Who's going to help me if he comes back? Who's going to help the lady in another state that he lies to about his name, his birthday, his age, where he comes from, where he lives? Who's going to help them? What have you done to protect the city, really? Really? Thank you for turning court and thank you for all the things you've done. But I'm asking for your help. I'm asking for police help.
Yeah, and thank you, Mayor. We have begun to talk and met her this morning, and we've begun to discuss the issues. And Chief, if you would, again, get with us now, and let's get the latest developments. But we're actively on top of it and are trying to do what we as the city can do. But now the courts and the county judges are the ones that set the bail.
Did the county judges need to be held accountable?
Let me finish, man. So with that being said, we as the city will step up and do the things that we can do, and we'll direct her in the areas where she needs to go to get some additional assistance.
And Mr.
Chief, if you get with us with that, and let's get with her now. We can handle that.
And Ms. Carraway, the address that she gave us, you've given us three different addresses. You got to have a good address.
3800 South Tyler Street is where I live. I've only given you two addresses.
Okay, then.
The address where the incident happened was in South Dallas on Carpenter Street.
Okay. Good deal.
We're dealing with it, and I'll personally keep a hand on myself. Chief, I'll meet you over there.
Thank you.
Your next and final speaker is Jonathan Pike. Jonathan Pike is not present. That concludes your speakers this morning, Mr. Mayor.
Mayor, if I could have a point of personal privilege before we move forward and just say one thing. Jerry, how about them Rangers? All right.
Is that the reason you asked for this to be convened no later than 2:30 today?
Absolutely.
Is that why
we must conclude today?
You promised you weren't going to make any comments?
I'm not going to make any more comments today.
Is that all of it?
That's it. Huh?
We're through the first inning right now. We're through the first inning.
We got to be
the first inning.
We got to be through.
I think everybody's saying 2:30, but you're
okay.
The teacher.
Okay, all right. I'm going to zip it.
The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of October 6, 2010. They may not rise quite to the Rangers game last night, but nevertheless, if I could have a motion. Move and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, our appointments to boards and commissions, please.
Item number 2 is consideration of appointments to board and commissions. For individual appointment to the Board of Adjustment is Robert T. Richard, nominated by Council Member Natinsky.
Move and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. Thank you very much, Madam Secretary. City Secretary Office will now brief the City Council this morning on a change in the way that both boards and commission nominees submit their application for background checks. Until now, as I think we're all aware, the application process has been largely paper-driven. The change we'll hear about today gives any citizen the ability to submit an application electronically. This new process will not only save time, but will also reduce costs, and in addition to that, give council members access to a larger pool of citizens that are interested in serving on our boards and commissions. With that, Madam Secretary, can I turn to you?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We met some time ago with the mayor regarding board and commissions and how we can automate the process. And we thought of several ideas in which we could save money as well as present a good product to allow our citizens to access the pool of vacancies that the City of Dallas has for board and commissions. So we work very hard with Communication and Information Services and realize that we currently have a NeoGov system in place. And this NeoGov system currently allows citizens as well as employees to apply for jobs online. So we worked with this same system that we currently have to allow employees and citizens to apply for jobs to use it to allow citizens to apply for members or nominees to board and commissions. So we kind of converted this NeoGov system to work for the City Secretary's office and the citizens of Dallas to allow them to apply for to be members of board and commissions. You know, for years we've been paper-driven, as the mayor says, and the citizens have completed applications. Sometimes the applications were complete. Sometimes we had to call them back and say, you need to fill in additional information. We don't have all we need. And with the cut in our staff, we found it almost necessary that we come up with some method of automation. So we've given you a handout. We've given you also a look at the system. And Danny Feliz, who is the Board and Commission's manager, there he is. He's going to come up and explain the system to you. And one of the several of the advantages of the system that I want to highlight is, number one, citizens of Dallas will have access. The system is efficient. It's time-saving for our staff. And it provides the citizens with an opportunity to serve the City of Dallas. And with that, I am going to allow Danny to come up and start his presentation. And also, you will see a little handout. We are launching the City Secretary's new website. I think for about 10 years, we've had a website that we needed to work on. So you will also see a color printout of how our new website is, and it's being launched today. And this is with the help of Communication and Information Services and that team that worked with the City Secretary's office to assist us.
Good morning, Mayor and members of the City Council. On the appendix to the briefing on page one, you'll see a screenshot of the City of Dallas website. When a prospective applicant chooses to fill out an application, they'll be able to get to the NeoGov system first through the City of Dallas homepage. Along the left navigational panel, you'll see a link to the City Secretary's office. And if they click on that link, it'll go to the City Secretary's new website, which Ms. Watkins has already made reference to. On the home page of the City Secretary's office, we have a link to the NeoGov system. On page 3 is the screen that an applicant will see when they click on that link to the NeoGov system. Along the left side of that page are the primary links that will help them navigate the system. What they'll want to do initially is click on the second from the top, which is Board and Commission Applicant Login. When they do that, they will see the screen on slide number 4. If you are a returning member, returning user, you can already log in and use your password. Most will need to create a new password and log in, and they will do that by choosing the link indicated by the arrow. When they do that, on screen 5, you'll see what they will see, which is the initial profile that they will need to complete. This will remain standard, and they will be able to bring this in as they fill out new applications for different board positions. When they save that screen, they will have the opportunity at that point to create a new application, which would be specific to any particular board that they want to apply for. They can name every application that they want to create, so that they can customize it for any board position that they want to, for the different board positions that they may want to apply for. On slide 8, you'll see the type of information that we will initially collect on the first screen. And as I said, when they go to create different applications after this point, all that information that's collected here will be brought into new applications, or when they decide to update their application. When they save this screen, it will take them to what you see on slide 9, And at this point, they'll be able to update or edit any of their inputs. As they come back at a later date, they may want to update their applications to customize it to the various boarding commissions that they want to apply for. There's also an opportunity for either them to type directly into the document, or as you see on slide 11, they'll be able to upload either the resume or other documents they want to include with their application. On slide 12, you'll see what we currently have on our website is a list of all the boards and commissions and descriptions. If they click on any of the names of the boards and commissions, they'll be able to get to a complete description. On slide 13, again, that's the initial screen that they see when they log in. If, for example, if they wanted to click, if they wanted to apply for the Animal Shelter Commission, they can just click on that title, and it will take them to some more information about the Animal Shelter Commission. The three tabs that run across the top are description of the board, the benefits, and the supplemental questions. The benefits tab was not something that we had control over or could change because of cost and complexity, so we wanted to make it clear that there is no benefit to serve other than service to the city, of course, but no financial or monetary benefits to serving on a board or commission. Some boards and commissions do require special qualifications, and the supplemental questions are there at the beginning when they begin to apply for a board or commission that has those, and they will need to complete those, and then they would click apply. Of course, the information that's already been completed will be brought into their new application for the board. You'll see running across the top a status of where you are in the application process for that particular board. On slide 18, the agency-wide questions, those are the questions that are now found on the current board and commission application. On slide 19 at the bottom of that page, you'll see that there is one additional question that we added to ensure that people know that they will be background checked, and by giving us their initials, that will allow us to complete that check. The supplemental questions, of course, are repeated here to make sure that they are answered so that we know that people qualify for those boards that do require special qualifications. On slide 21, this, if for some reason someone wants to submit an application that's, and they don't want to include either a work history or education, they will need to take a specific step to submit an application that does not include either of those two. On slide 22, as you confirm your application, you will receive a notice, which is located on slide 23, that tells you that you will be background checked, and it also restates some of the other instructions that are located to make sure that there is no confusion about what the process will be from this point on. And then the final slide that an applicant will see is states at the bottom that they can also contact your office if they have questions about service on board or commission. If there are any questions, we're ready to answer in brief regard to the board.
Do you want to add anything else for?
No, I think that's about it. We went through it very fast, Mayor, just to give them an overview.
No, good job. Ms. Davis?
I have some questions. Now, if an individual, they do not have a computer, what can they go online to get to fill out of this application?
They can always come to our office. We'll be more than willing to work with them. We're also going to work with the board coordinator to help them. Help us be the help desk to people, supporting commissions and other citizens who will need assistance.
So each board, for example, would have some type of computer where they can go and do it online. I'm just making up a board, whatever board, can they have some type of computer there that the individual can use?
Yeah, I mean, it's a public website, so they can go anywhere and complete the application. We still have a PDF version of the application on our website, and that can be printed down. They can come to our office and pick up an application. We still have other methods for them to receive the application and complete it.
Okay.
But we want to start the automated process. And, you know, they can come into our office right at the front, and we have a computer right there in front
now
that they
long,
can use.
How long will the background check take?
Is it still 30 days?
It's still 30 days. It will take 30 days to complete the background check. So that has not changed, Ms. Davis.
Okay. And then one more question. So if somebody's trying to get on the board in January, for example, then they just come into the office in November and fill out the application and have it. Is it from November to November the 3rd? So they come November the 15th, then they have to December the 15th, right? That's their 30 days.
Meaning the citizen?
Uh-huh.
The citizen can come in and complete the application at any time. It's just from the date that they complete the application and submit, we have 30 days to 45 days, I think, to complete the background check.
45 days. Okay.
Yeah, 30 to 45 days.
Ms. Cooper, then Ms. McGowan.
Thank you, Mayor. This is great, and I think it will greatly help people who are not only applying, but also people who are researching who's on who appointees are to various boards and so on and so forth. I just have one, maybe the next generation of when you update that. And that's under the description of the board. Now I'm trying to get back to that screen. Right, description of boards. If it would be possible in the next generation, you've got to go through, even though you have the thumbnail on the left-hand side, and this happens also when you mail it out to us as well. You've got to go through the whole, you know, packet, or even here, the whole series of screens in order to get to the one that perhaps you're interested in. If it's in the middle of the alphabet, you're trying to figure out which thumbnail goes, you know, I mean, you can't just pull it up by the name of the board and commission. You've got to go through all the thumbnails in order to find it. Although you do know it's in alphabetical order, it'd be really a lot easier if you have a listing of all the boards, okay, and just be able to click on that and go directly to it. Okay, it'd be very helpful. I know that's probably something that you'd have to work on over a period of time, but in the next generation of it, it's not so important on the rest of the, when you go back to the main screen on some of them, you know, like board chairs, well, you can easily flip through board chairs of, you know, the 20 or so boards, or even a list of vacancies, because I just went to that just a second ago. You can easily go to that as well. It's not very difficult. But under board description is extremely difficult. Now, a lot of people are going to be looking at that, you know, when we say go to, you know, description of the board and who's on it, so on and so forth, and they're going to be first-time users, and it's going to be more challenging for them. So just a thought.
That's a good comment, too, and even down to kind of the nitty-gritty. How often does it meet? What are the hours of the day and all those sorts of things? If you can even elaborate more on that, because, again, I think to Mr. Koop's point, that's what a lot of people are looking at. It's just give me the basics. Even as I've asked people to get involved, they always start with the basics. When do they meet? How much time? All those sorts of things. So as much as you can put in there, that'd be awful helpful, too. Ms. Margolin?
Is this functioning now? Has it begun? Okay, we can tell people to go.
Turn it on today, yes.
You're going to turn it on today. Okay. And then when somebody applies, is there going to be a notice back to us if they're applying for one of our positions?
Yes. If you have a vacant position and someone applies for that position, then we're going to be working with your assistants and secretaries to give them notice that an application has been received. There'll also be just people who apply generally for positions on a board, and we'll work with your assistants to the level of information you want to receive.
Okay. So if, let's say, for example, that there's Board X, and I already have someone appointed to Board X, but somebody else applies not knowing that, what would happen?
That will be one of the ones that will go in the pool. But as I said, we'll work with your assistants. Some assistants, they want to get everything that comes in, or they may just want to have access to the pool for those folks that are from the particular district,
mm-hmm.
or if someone is applying for from another district, but they're
okay.
interested in serving on that particular board and they need someone, then we'll give them that as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mail. Mr. Juski.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, I think on the application sheet, at the bottom of each one, there's a thing that says,
gives you the ordinance and code number or whatever, is it possible, it should be possible, to just make that a link so that they can just click on it if they want to read the ordinance without having them to go to, you know, city charter and all that. Since you type that other stuff in, making the link probably is fairly simple.
Perfect.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Good step. Mary, on the
on our fleet briefing, as we were beginning to prepare the budget last January, February, this is an area that we felt like needed a good, strong look. We've begun that process, and good, strong look and some changes. We've begun that process wanting to kind of give you an in-process report. We're making changes. You'll see how we're beginning that. In addition to that, the auditor has been doing some work in this area, so we've kind of overlapped each other and made some similar observations. But just wanted to give you a heads up that this is an area that we're working in for the upcoming year and looking at improving our operations in this. And Forrest Turner will go through this reasonably quickly since we're assuming everyone's read it. So, Forrest?
So if we want to go to the recap? Okay.
Not quite that fast. Just don't dawdle.
Page four. So you can see there kind of the overview. $50 million budget, 230 employees. The map on page 5 gives you a sense of where those service centers are located. Page 6, again with the overview, 5,100 active units in the fleet. We've got light duty trucks, garbage trucks, all of that. And the average age is 5.7 years. We want to point out that 37% of the fleet is alternative fuels. You can see on page 7 how that stacks up visually. So on page 8, we talk about the operations. We see on the left sort of stacked side are the operations of fleet services, and then the other side, the right side, parts, fuel, and tires are the support functions that go along with it. The main bread and butter, if you will, is repair and maintenance of vehicles, and that's our main service. On page 9, the first step in the process is procurement. This is a process that involves EBS, financial services, and other service departments. On the bullet that talks about EBS and OFS working together, that's where we make decisions in terms of how many to buy, cash versus debt financing, and other issues related to the purchase for the budget in the upcoming year.
And Forrest, this is one of the areas that we'll be focusing as we move forward on types of vehicles. Anybody that's run a fleet or operated a fleet knows that the fewer different types you have, the more efficient you can be in repairs and maintenance. And so we're going to be making some serious review this year of the types of vehicles we have with the various folks. Since vehicles are the way people deliver their services, they feel very sensitive about them, but these are decisions that we have to be made and have to be working on as we move forward in improving the efficiency and effectiveness of this operation. So you may hear some of that as we work through this process of being more uniform in our fleet.
So on page 10, the next step, the second big step in the process is you buy the vehicles, you've got to get them in service, and make ready is a big function for the city. And this is a big area where we're working with the audit, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but we're working with the city auditor and other areas to make improvements here to eliminate the amount of time that needs to get a vehicle from purchase to in service.
This is one area also I want to call out to you. You hear a lot of conversations about we have police cars sitting on lots waiting for usage. Police cars cannot be ordered but once a year. So when they arrive, we're not going to put them all in service immediately. And that doesn't make any sense. You need to drive the cars that you need in that upcoming year till they wear out so that you will see sometimes that the police cars will stay and make ready longer than the normal cars. If you can only get them once a year and you have to have them for the end of that year, that's the way the process you have to do. Now, we're reviewing the process to make sure we can do that as efficiently as we can, but it is important to know that some of this equipment we order is available once. They don't set up the manufacturing lines to make them but once a year.
In fact, on this page, Ms. Sum is helping me remember that we want to talk about not only the process to order it from the manufacturer, but it's also a police car has to be equipped with computer equipment, DVRs, recording equipment, and other communication functions. So
this page kind of walks you through the fact that it does take some time to get a vehicle ready. On page 11, just a quick snapshot, you can see there the same type of stuff that many of us deal with our own personal cars, that you got to have the maintenance, and this is the part that takes care of it. Repair are those things, as our folks refer to them as non-target repairs, things that just happen. You have something that breaks in the engine component, got to get it repaired. So we do both repairs and the routine maintenance. Page 12. You get to a part where you're going to have to take items out of service. We have options to retire them. We want to go through a process where we reevaluate a car or a truck before we sell it as to whether we should reassign it for a different service or if we should salvage parts that are expensive for us to buy. Then, when we consider those two things, we then move to an option if we no longer need the vehicle. Page 13.
And you'll recognize a lot of our folks are driving former police cars. And so we hand the equipment down as long as we can.
On page 13, when Ms. Sue made some changes in this department with a new executive team, we started by talking to our customers. It didn't take long for our big customers, police and sanitation, to tell us that they thought we need to work on ways to improve customer service and get the PMs done in a timely way. So this is some of what we heard from the customers. On page 14, we begin to talk about it. We set a team up that had representatives from EBS, police, sanitation, the financial services office, and this team worked for 6 months to kind of look at top to bottom, you know, what's there, look at each operation, take it apart, examine it closely, and see if there were ways we could improve that process and make those improvements as we go. So on page 15, you begin to see some of those recommendations, and I'll walk through them. The first one, the team recommended and the partners think we should move to be a warranty shop. As we buy new vehicles, they have warranties on them. We now have to send them out to a dealership. We want to become certified in-house so that that work can be done in-house and meet the specifications of the warranty. And we're in the planning stages of doing that. Lease versus buying the equipment, we've considered it, but that's done each year on an annual basis through the budget office and determine whether we should lease or buy with cash or issue equipment notes.
And most of the time, leasing is just another form of financing, and honestly, we can usually get better rates on our own than going through a company that's leasing to us. So we've looked at this repeatedly. We'll continue to look at it. It comes up regularly in our discussion about fleet, but it is not proven over time to be cost-effective for us.
The next one, the team recommended that although we have two departments that have make-ready functions, EBS and CIS, one from an operation of the vehicle, the other from communications, we should combine those two units in one location, and we've implemented that, and we've already started to see improvements in that make-ready process. Carpool, that's under review. The real challenge there is to make sure that the car that's available as a pool car is able to be used by multiple departments. Team-based approach, similar to DART, we've done that. That's where we have one service center that has measured goals, measured objectives that will be compared to others, much like we do in the police department. I'll use that example. On Thursdays when they have CompSat, that service unit is measured on their performance, and the group will see how they perform compared to their colleagues, and you get to measure performance and look for improvement. So we want to do that in the area of automotive repair, and that's something we're going to do. Next page. Purchasing review, we're in progress. We're going to hire a procurement manager to focus on looking at our database to see what type of equipment. This is where we begin the process to move towards standardizing the fleet and move away from naming the type of vehicles to saying we have, for example, subcompact cars, compact cars, trucks, and describe it in a generic way and buy according to those standardized measures. Department-wide training, that's something that's in progress. We want to make sure that when we take a vehicle into the fleet that the staff is ready to work on it. Any new technology, we want to make sure that our staff is trained before we take delivery. Communication to increase productivity, this is something we implemented. By having planning and production meetings, we're making sure that our service centers plan the number of PMs and they get graded on those PMs each month and see how we did compared to what we planned. Also looking, they asked us to change the way we bill. That's something we looked at and we didn't want to implement. We think EBS is the host department of the fleet services, and we want them to be responsible for the asset from the time we acquire it to the time we sell it or take it out of service. Next page. So I talked earlier on page 17, Ms. Soon put an executive staff in place. The team worked for some time with HR and civil service to reorg the division, reducing the span of control of those managers so that they can just be measured on what that service center provides to its customers. We have those new performance measures in place. We show you two of them where each month they're going to be compared to what was planned and what they actually got accomplished. And if you do that, we know that the availability of vehicles will go up. And that's what we want to strive to do. I talked about the fleet manager position on the bottom there, so we can move on to the next page, please. Additional programming features, we wanted to add those features so that our M5 is the name of the database that keeps track of all the vehicles that we have. We wanted to be able to track and monitor it by service center so that we can get information about maintenance costs related to vehicle type. So if we know some vehicle is not performing well with our service, that we don't continue to buy that vehicle, we can take it out of service. We looked at a pilot program to do oil change for the police department. This is something they wanted us to do so that their officers can work, just get an oil change like, you know, anybody driving into a Jiffy Lube, so to speak. And we're in the pilot program. We'll be done in March with that, and we hope to be back with you in terms of the results. Additional work shifts to make sure that garbage trucks and police cars, something we worked on, we added those shifts.
Now, this is one I just want to mention to you, that this shift change is always a challenge for employees that are used to working different kind of shifts, but this makes sense in maintenance of our equipment that is less of it in usage at off hours. So, again, this is something that will make the operation more efficient, but you may hear about.
On page 19, I want to spend a little time. The city auditor started this audit. It was part of their plan, audit plan for the year. So while our team was working to look for ways to improve, the audit began. The focus was on this particular audit that's currently in process was on the scope dealt with fleet utilization and software. There are going to be other audits that will come up that will look at other areas in fleet. So we'll be working with the audit as they complete the current one they're working on and any future audit. We want to work closely so that wherever we can make improvements, we do that either with efficiency teams or working through the city auditor. And then finally, recap. We reorganized those divisions. We're already working to finish the month of October to see how we did in terms of our work, in terms of what we planned. Each service center has those productivity meetings that I talked about, and we're going to continue to evaluate, looking for ways to make improvements and also move towards standardizing our fleet. And with that, I'll take any questions you might have.
Good first step. I mean, we've been talking about this for quite some time, Mary. It's one of the areas of the city that can make a big difference as far as the not only performance but in the finances. And that was my question. We talk about performance measures for us.
Yes.
We don't talk about financial measures. And so I want to know in the end, not only did you satisfy your customers,
mm-hmm.
okay? Not only did you get the product out on time, change the oil on time, increase your efficiencies by perhaps having a standardized fleet and having just those technicians that are needed for that standardized fleet. And I also want to know what economies of scale did you get at the end, okay?
Okay.
What did you save at the end? Because this is an exercise not only in satisfying the people that are using the product, also the customers, the taxpayers who are expecting good service, but also the financial end of it. So that's kind of what I want to hear. And to that point, I was wondering, you had this team come together and give you ideas and so on and so forth. I think it was a good idea. I think that's probably the way you should have done it. But I also want to know if you also checked with some of the large fleet providers.
Yeah.
in the city, AT&T, UPS, to see how they run their operations.
Yes, yes, we did. We the team, as I said, took 6 months. We looked at UPS, we looked at DART, We spoke to and visited with CD Industries, who is another company that don't have a fleet. They got out of it just because some of the challenges that we have. We also have a group that continues to look at any big operation that has a fleet, so that if it's more than a telephone call, to find out what are you doing different from us. So yes, we did look at that.
Okay. I just don't want you to be looking at just governmental entities.
Yeah.
And one of the challenges with this, though, is very few entities are involved in as many businesses as we are in a type of fleet support of those businesses. So if you see one you think good for us to look at, us let us do that. We'll be glad to. We've been doing it. But again, the different lines of business makes our stuff really challenging. So.
Yeah, I can understand that. I don't want us to lose sight of the fact also that we're always going to have that small portion of the fleet that's experimental. Right now we have 20 electric cars that are coming on board. We've made that commitment through various governmental agencies to beta test products, and so I don't want us to lose that
commitment
as well. I know that's a little bit more challenging for your operations guys and also for your maintenance guys, but I think it's important that we beta test some of this stuff so that we can go ahead and get those technologies. What they're doing is they're getting those technologies out on the street quicker when governmental entities beta test those. And that's why we get from the council of governments to get a certain amount of grant money and that kind of thing. That's what it's for. So, okay, but good job.
We'll stick with those for sure, because those are our future. We want to know how they'll work.
And when can we expect to have some type of performance and financial evaluation?
This spring.
Okay.
We'll line them up together this early spring.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Coop really covered my question. I wanted to know if there was ultimately going to be information on financial impact.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. A couple comments. Mary, or Forrest, if you know the answer. Since we are forced to buy police cars only once a year because that's the only time the
manufacturer
makes them, what happens from a warranty perspective, because most of them have the warranty
is mileage.
So it's only mileage when you buy police cars.
Yeah, mileage.
Okay. So it differs from a regular car when you buy.
Yeah. We'll check on that and be sure of that. I'm pretty sure.
Normally, it's 4 years and 50,000 miles or whatever. Well, if the car sits around for a year, effectively,
we're going to try to cut some of that out, but it's a challenge when you're only putting them out one time.
Okay. Well, I understand that.
But I'll check on that for
you. See if that works, because maybe you have to have a conversation with the manufacturer. If they can buy them once a year, don't start the clock tick until we put them in service. I like the idea of the standardization of the vehicle. You know, the fewer things that you've got to deal with, the more efficient you can be with it. You didn't mention it, but I hope we're looking at the appropriateness of the vehicle used by the various employees.
That's what we meant by standardization. Yes.
Well, okay. I'm sorry. My view of standardization is that we buy fewer variations of vehicles.
Yes.
But part
of that is magic. All of you don't need an F-150 pickup to be hauling around.
Amen.
Right.
Yeah. With four-wheel drive and big stuff. Okay.
We have trouble getting over that. And
the only thing I saw missing on a couple is the shotgun rack in the back window.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's okay. And my last comment is, let's not forget about paying attention to the appearance of the vehicles. That sends a message. I mean, when you see a vehicle, be it a police car, a code car, or whatever, with the rear plastic bumper half hanging off, and somebody's out there, that does not send a very good message to the citizens that see that vehicle, driving around.
Right.
So, anyway, that's it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Mary, my question goes to, and I appreciate Ms. Coop talking about financial measurements, because this is no small money. My money goes to the customer, true customer feedback. Dallas Police Department and Sanitation are the two biggest supplier of vehicles for EBS to take care of, correct?
Yes.
How can we get assured that we're getting arm's length true feedback from them?
Well, we
hear regularly complaints about, I can't get the squad car out on time and that sort of thing.
We'll look at some ways to do some surveys to bring back to you when we come back in spring. I will tell you, the police don't have much trouble expressing their concerns and issues, and my view is that they're the customer. We have to work on that make sure we get it done.
So is there some measurement of that we're doing a better job of pleasing that customer? The whole reason we're using UPS is economies of scale, and also that the second half would be that we're taking care of the customer. And if the primary customer is sanitation and Dallas Police Department, how do we know independently that indeed DBS through fleet services
well,
taking care of
it? Availability is one thing.
And so are there measurements that show
yes,
that?
Yes, there's absolutely. Availability is something we almost do daily. We'll get that for you as we come back.
I think that would be very tangible.
Okay. Okay.
Because availability is an empirical number, objective.
Right.
It's not subjective, and it really goes to over a period of time.
Yes.
Okay. So I think that would go to help me understand the level of efficiency on an empirical
okay.
basis. Talk for a minute about the expertise within fleet management. People that have, what's the level of expertise in managing it?
The expertise in managing the fleet or
yep.
from an executive standpoint?
Well, the executive team as well. I'm zeroing in on, do we have sufficient expertise, industry expertise, not administrative, but industry-related expertise? Ms. Coop was right. She said, how does this fleet services compare to private industry, non-governmental? I'm interested in the measurement and make sure we have the sufficient capacity to have expertise. Where are we on that?
So first, we have the expertise and the talent to care for the fleet that we have. That's first, to answer your question. The area that we want to make sure of is that as we standardize the fleet, so the chart on page 7, please, chart on page 7, as we move to reduce the number of light-duty pickup trucks mm-hmm. and vans and sedans to smaller alternative fuel vehicles, the hybrids, we want to make sure that we have the talent and the expertise that deals with a fleet that's primarily alternative fuel vehicles. So,
Mary, I'm zeroing in on the executive and managerial. Do we have individuals
we have
in place that have years of experience in managing a fleet?
Right. I wanted to take them one at a time. First,
okay.
from just an operational standpoint, we do have the talent to work on it. Now, from an executive standpoint, we have the team in place. We soon put a new team in place. We've worked with our customers. We meet regularly with them. And we set the standards in place to measure our performance. So I feel like from operating and executive, we have the team.
Okay. Could you provide some names and
sure.
I'd like some information about the industry-related experience in running this operation that shows that we have people that have industry-type related experience, not just administrative, not just managerial, that move from one city department to another, but tangible experience of expertise.
So we can do that.
That would be helpful. Again, that helps us make sure that for something that we're doing here, it has comparison to the private sector.
Okay, but you need... We can't. The two times that we have privatized fleets,
I didn't say privatized.
Okay, just wait, let me explain to you. It is a different line of business. We certainly can learn from fleet management in the private sector, but it is a different line of business. So the experience that you're looking for may not necessarily be directly. I was in a private fleet, and I'm here. Although we have some of those.
Well, we've looked. There are private fleet managers who have a fleet that's all F-150s or
yeah.
all one type vehicles.
We'll get
so
you the information.
We'll get that.
We'll get
we can provide that.
I'm trying to give it a comparison to the
private. I understand what you're trying to.
Because I think that's a more truer way of measuring efficiency. When you give us the empirical data about availability of sanitation and police cars and other things, that'll give us an empirical, objective way of measuring readiness and availability.
Tell you, the two times we privatized, they couldn't keep up with availability.
I'm not going towards privatization. I just want to see the comparison.
Okay, we'll do that.
Okay. That way it's more empirical, more objective rather than the subjective.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
The only question I have, will these fleets, we talked about, I guess sometimes this year we didn't deal with budget, some of them did not have air conditioning.
Well, some of them will not have air conditioning because they have to be repaired.
Okay.
So that's what we'll work on, keeping them repaired. Another complaint we had was the radios weren't working. Well, we went back and counted a small percentage in sanitation. I think it was about 16% had the radios not working or in the process of being repaired.
Okay.
So at one point in time, there'll be trucks without air conditioning, trucks without radio. It's our responsibility to make sure that standard keeps rising.
Okay.
Okay, but you're working on that. How many is it? It's not that many.
I can't tell you today, but we can make a survey and see.
Okay, would you get that?
Yes, we'll do that.
Thank you. Forrest, go to page 10. And could you just kind of explain, there are two separate make-ready processes to get the vehicles ready for service?
That's right.
Is that a new vehicle or an old vehicle?
That would be a new vehicle. When we take a new vehicle into the fleet, there's a make-ready process to get it equipped, decals, license, all that stuff. And then there's a process to get radios,
okay,
computers, things like that. So that's what I mean by
two separate. Okay, new, okay. If you take delivery of a vehicle, would do that vehicle set out for a period of months before you go to make ready?
There will be a time period where it sits idle, either from the make ready in terms of fleet EBS.
No, I'm talking about make ready. Before it goes make ready, you know, when you take delivery of the vehicle.
No. No,
there's no time.
No, well, not significant. But when we take delivery of a vehicle, it gets put in the system to get it ready to get into service. That's part of the rush.
Reception of police cars.
Right.
Okay, what about cars, police cars?
They are ordered only once a year because they're manufactured only once
a
year.
And rewind, I said, back to Linda's coupe question. Linda, from a manufacturer standpoint of view, that and warranted, and that would run the tinsel stand from the manufacturer, once you start your make ready, that's when the warranty starts from the manufacturer level. So when you say that car is made ready, that's when the warranty starts. So if you're saying that if we need the mileage versus the age, then you need to get a certification from the manufacturer or the agent to say this vehicle will start warning at this particular time. And that's a DD rep. So you're dealing with Ford Motor Company, GM,
right,
whoever. You got to get the manufacturer on board to cover that. And that's when the time starts ticking. Dave, back to your question, can you just kind of clarify what you mean by are we had expertise? I'm trying to follow your logic, what you're trying to accomplish, and what is the missing,
Well, if I can, Mayor, what I want to do is, I hail from the private sector. A lot of us hail from the private sector. And so we want a city government as efficient as possible that takes care of the needs within the resources we have. And so just like we want to make sure that our chief financial officer of the city is someone that has sufficient experience, Gene's not in the room, I don't know, sufficient experience in order to do the job as CFO.
Right.
Okay, well, same thing over and over. I just want to make sure that as we review and we take the time as a council today to review fleet services and within EBS that we have the right executives in the right place to be able to bring private sector expertise in order to make it efficient, effective, and as effective as it can be. I'm not lobbying for privatization.
I guess, will you be saying as to maintain the fleet, to manage the fleet, there's two different areas.
All the above.
All the above.
We want to make sure that we have sufficient expertise, whether it be for fleet management or for taking care of our buildings,
okay,
or that sort of thing.
Okay, now,
and that dovetails Ms. Coop's comment about, private sector fleets.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Turner, could you tell me how many different type of vehicle we had? Is they all Ford, they all GM, they all mix and match, or what?
The short answer is we have a mix. Of the 5,100 units, we have a mixture of vehicles.
Okay, with a mixture of vehicles, do you have any support from the manufacturer?
I want to make sure I answer your question and be clear.
Right.
We have an ASC certified managers, ASC certified mechanics who understand how to coordinate with the manufacturer, the dealers, and all of those people along the chain.
Right.
As so well as keeping up with
you
all
have
technology. Yes.
So you have a representative who know Ford product, someone who knows GM, so you do break those in different classes.
Our service center managers have average 25 years of
automotive. That's not my question. My question is, number one, when you manage different
type of fleet, different type, you know, is Ford or GM,
right.
And that's called for a certain type of manager because they know that product, they know the parts, they know
that's
how
true.
To get the service, all of that.
That's true.
And I'm just trying to do you kind of streamline that manager skill, you know, hey, if I'm buying 2,000 vehicles from Ford Motor Company each year, okay, Ford, can you tell me what is good, what is bad, you know, with management, whatever, are we getting any kind of relationship with that manufacturer?
In fact, that's what Ms. Thum was referring to is where we want to go. Is that as we standardize the fleet, we want to be subject matter experts on our fleet when it's one standard type fleet. Right now we have a mix.
Well, and I think that, Mary Thum, I think that if we got different type of fleet, I think you need to go back to the manufacturer. They got a program to give you that free consultant to get there, to recertify you, to do all of that. And I think that'll kind of clear up some of the loose ends. Again, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. The open session reconvenes at 12:30. We continue now with your afternoon speakers. Your first speaker will be Joseph Parisi, followed by Azumba Lunk. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the sergeant at arms is so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. The timers are on the wall. When the numbers turn to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. Please address your comments to the Chair, Councilmember Natinsky. Again, your first speaker is Joseph Parisi, not present. Azumba Lunk, not present. Trina Trish. Please state your name and address for the record.
Trina Trish, Dallas City. How about that? Thank you all for the opportunity to address the council, to the mayor in his absence, to Mayor Pro Tem Caraway in his absence, to Mayor Pro Tem Madrano in her absence, and to the absence of all the other council members who did not take the time and opportunity to allow a taxpaying citizen to give her comments to those who serve. I appreciate those who stayed and those who stayed and are at least courteous enough to listen. We have had several, I've come before the council talking about wasting government, effective and efficient government, and how we can do things better, effectively, and efficiently so that we can keep our policemen, our firemen, our city service people on the job, keep our arts going and everything else. Nevertheless, I'd like to make this statement because, again, I was in opposition of property tax increase. I do know, and I've stated in my newsletter, and I state everywhere I go, that property taxes increase do not stimulate the economy. As a matter of fact, it makes it worse. But what I'm going to do now is, and when I never know what I'm going to say, I'm going to speak to a couple of people. This book that I'm reading, African American Millionaires, talks of people who were born slaves and the great strides they made in a time when they were not even free. How do you do that? Because your surroundings do not determine your economy. I think Quincy Jones would say something inside so strong determines your economy. What am I saying? I told you about an article that said that the U.S. poverty rate is at a 15-year high. This has been happening for 3 years, and the only way to make a turnaround is if we empower the poor. We've come this far by faith, but how far have we come if when slaves became millionaires and we have people who can't give a dime to the poor? Unless we help economically empower people,
which was the same message as Dr. King, and not because Barack Obama is president, we think his dream has come to pass. No, it has not. He said he didn't care who was president as long as everyone had equal opportunity to become president. His message was one of economic empowerment. And yet everywhere we go, the ineffective and inefficiency of government is doing everything to keep us everything but economically empowered. Again, if this man Leodorf can build San Francisco, if other slaves, Madam C.J. Walker, and other people become millionaires in a time when they're barely free, how much more can we unless government helps empower us? Thank you.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Tamara Washington.
Washington, and I live at 2814 Painted Trail, Dallas, Texas, 75237, and basically I'm here today to talk about city departments. City departments, there's a lot of them, and so basically to me, if they can be readjusted and made better by having the department people in the department give their opinions, and also you talked about having leasing vehicles. Well, you know, leasing vehicles or buying the vehicles, this is something that's been maybe just come up again, and maybe it's something that should already be figured out and should just be just a review, nothing major. And those are my comments today.
And when I say a review, meaning just something that here's a printout of how much it is to lease, here's a printout of how much it is to buy, and go on someone's desk, and that's it, not a big meeting on it. You know, review of the year. Thank you.
Your next speaker is Gwen Wooten, not present. No further speakers.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. It's 12:37. We are now adjourned.